Who wants a bunk bed, Bill? There's never been a better time to sign up for a yearly EPP, Extra Podcast Person membership to Real Ghost Stories Online. Right now, when you become a yearly EPP, you'll get 1 month free membership to our EPP programs. You'll also be able to claim your very own Bunk Bed Bell. Plus, you'll be doing your part to help keep our show on the air.
It's amazing. It's all amazing. We feel so much better.
A show that helps thousands of people worldwide.
Thanks again for providing this outlet and making it so non-threatening.
Feel not so alone with their haunting experiences.
You guys are amazing. We listen to you all the time.
Become a yearly EPP now. Get a free month of our EPP membership and get your very own Bunk Bed Bell.
Hurry though, supplies are limited.
If you're currently a monthly EPP, then upgrade your membership now to a yearly membership and get your Bunk Bed Bell and a free month of EPP membership to Real Ghost Stories Online.
I think it's important for people to be able to have a place where they can share their experiences and validate them because these things are real.
Sign up now to be a yearly EPP at ghostpodcast.com. And thanks for your support.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a listener's out-of-body experience is quite frightening because she is watching her awake self. Could the items left behind in a home be the source of the home's haunting? A family finds out their home is haunted, but they are the only ones that can't see it. And a mother eerily seems to know when to check on her daughter and see if she is okay. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hi.
Hi, and how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Did you like the butter that we made?
Yes, it was delicious butter that you made.
That was our activity today, me and Harper.
They made butter upstairs from scratch.
Which is so easy.
They went out and they got a goat and then they milked it and they found one of the mountain, one of the bald areas of the mountain just roaming randomly together, and they got it. They put a sack over its head to calm it down, and then they brought it back. They led it back to our pasture and milked it. And
none of that's true. It was a carton of heavy whipping cream and a KitchenAid on high for 10 minutes. And that's how you make butter.
The goat part sounds a lot more like... What about the butter churners? Did you ever use a butter churn? Ever tried a butter churn? You know, where the big stick
deal? Yeah, I think at one of the, you know, Old West activity day, whatever mm-hmm. things that you go to, like in fifth grade.
As a kid, yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't work out so well. But I remember I learned how to make butter in school because you put whole milk in a, like a old mason jar or pickle jar, mm-hmm. and we all took turns shaking it for like 2 minutes.
Okay.
And at the end, you had butter, and it didn't taste anything like the butter we knew as
sure.
kids. It did taste like high-end, nice butter that you get at a restaurant to go on bread, but not, you know,
not the
parquet or whatever
Land O'Lakes.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. So. But it was tasty, and you even used some fresh rosemary.
I did.
It was, it's delicious.
Yeah, it was fun.
And just to put butter in everything for the next couple weeks will be great.
We can save part of it in the freezer.
I love putting butter on things. I think I like butter better than oil.
Uh-huh.
I was on that oil kick for a while when that was the thing.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I've kind of gone back to butter.
Yeah.
There you go. I don't know what that has to do with my ghosts, but I like butter. There you go.
Okay.
I'm Tony, and I like butter. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can write it on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Or you can also email in your story, your audio file. Send it to Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. Did I just say that?
Yeah.
I said it twice. What I think I meant was to go to the website or call, and I repeated one twice.
Okay.
I left one out. Anyhow, it's still
after surgery and I'm confused.
Uh-huh. You're going to blame everything
forever.
On that. Forever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yes. Amanda writes, and hello, I've written in before, but I'm so far behind in my binge listening. I'm not sure if my story has been read on the show or not. If so, it was about having a dream of finding a knife in a hotel shower and then finding possible knife marks in that same hotel shower the next morning. Well, like I said, I'm far behind in listening to the episodes, and I just heard a guy call in and talk about his experience of astral projection or an out-of-body experience. I've had the same sort of thing happen. Did you knock your head on the mic there?
No, yeah, okay. I had something tickling my nose, and I went to reach up, and I forgot my mic was there.
Okay, just I saw, like, in the corner of my eye, you had, like, your hand by your face, and I wasn't sure if you, like...
I just had a special moment, that's
dislocated
all.
Your nose or something?
No, all good.
Okay. I've had the same sort of thing happen. I've always considered it to be an out-of-body experience, but I'm not sure what the difference is between that and the astral projection. First time it happened to me, I was actually driving. It's a normal day. Got up, ready for work, and was out the door before the sun was up. I just pulled off my street and onto the highway. Since it was so early in the morning, there were hardly any other cars on the road. Everything seemed normal, but then I started to have this feeling like I was being watched. Slowly, I realized that I was watching myself driving from the passenger seat of the car. I stared at myself as I began to float through the windshield and continued to watch myself drive as I was hovering above the car that was driving down the road. I felt as if I was no longer in my body. All feeling and sensations were connected to the floating version of myself, and the driving version was just there going through the motions of the morning. The thoughts of how can this be happening and this is dangerous, I should be driving, entered my mind, and it was like my floating self snapped back into my body. The second occasion happened years later. I was dating a guy and we had driven out to his parents' house to spend the day. As soon as we got to their house, we got a frantic call from them. My boyfriend's teenage nephew had died in his home of heart failure. I was told that the boy had had heart problems since birth and had lived a lot longer than anyone had expected. We drove about 5 miles up the road to the family's house, and the boy was still in his room in his bed. I'd never met this part of my boyfriend's family and never been to their house before. I wanted to keep out of their way, so I sat down on the bench on their front porch since everyone was using the side door. This time, I did not have the feeling of being watched, but again, slowly, I realized I was looking at myself while sitting next to myself. Again, all sensation was not with my body, but with the version of me that should have been there. I shouldn't have been there. It was like I was looking at an empty shell of a person. I got up and walked away from my body. I walked alongside of the house, out into the backyard, down a path that led into the woods. About 50 yards down this path, there was a small break between the trees that opened to a view of a small lake. It was obvious this was a favorite fishing spot, and there was even a Y-shaped sticks sticking out of the ground that someone had used as a fishing pole rest. I walked back to where I had left my body, in the front porch, and as soon as I turned the corner of the house and saw myself, it was as if my detached self materialized and I became whole again. I got up and walked the same route that I had before. Everything looked exactly the same. The backyard, the path, the fishing spot by the lake, everything was the same, right down to the sticks used as the fishing pole rests. If I had fallen asleep or just dreamed of all this stuff, then I don't understand how the dream could have been so accurate since I had never been to that house before. Besides, in such an intense situation with the death of my boyfriend's nephew, there was no way I could have just passed out on the front porch. Nobody said anything about seeing me walking around or trying to talk to me while I was just an empty shell sitting on the porch. Those are my two out-of-body experiences. I do hope I can have another experience and have the presence of mind to pay more attention to how I feel so I can discuss the experience more in depth. Maybe I'll even try to see if my detached self can use a cell phone and I'll call in while astral projecting. That would be one heck of a phone call for the show. I love the show. Keep up the good work.
So I think the main question here is, what's the difference between astral projection and out-of-body experience? And I have my idea of what I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay, I think astral projecting is where you're asleep and you basically are going somewhere and you're seen as a ghost form, but you're not really dead.
Okay, so like the woman who saw the campfire at her old property.
Yeah.
That we had on a while back.
Right.
Okay.
And then out-of-body experience is, again, you can be awake or asleep and you're out of your body, but you see yourself, but you aren't really seen by anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Astral projection is a term used to describe willful out-of-body experience a form of telepathy that assumes the existence of a soul or consciousness called an astral body that is separate from the physical body and capable of traveling outside of it throughout the universe. So in this case, it became willful when she realized she was in it, but it wasn't like she was willing it to happen.
No.
She wasn't like, oh, shit, let's do an astral projection right now.
And when she came around and saw herself, then she kind of absorbed back into one person.
Sure. It's certainly bizarre, and it's troubling to think that that could just kind of happen at any given time, especially if you're driving.
Yeah.
Because I wonder, then, what is the reaction, and there's really not a case here for it, but what would the reaction be if another person came up to the physical body that was sitting there on the porch or driving in the car and started interacting with it? Would she suddenly be sucked right back into it, and then that continues? Or is there like some sort of like muted response that is given or not given?
I don't know, because it sounded like the instance where she's in the car, the consciousness part went with her projected self.
But there was enough consciousness still there driving the car.
Yes.
But it didn't veer off the road. You know, I think it'd be immediate veer off the road if there's just consciousness is gone.
Right.
But there's something that's there that's keeping that anchored.
Right.
It's like being in two places at once to a certain extent, but you're only conscious of one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, weird, bizarre, creepy stuff. That certainly happens to people.
Which makes me wonder, could that possibly explain doppelgangers?
Could it? Yeah, it could explain that. I mean, could it explain a lot of ghosts in general? I mean, my other question of that specific experience would be, let's say you're out there fishing and she comes walking down, or at least her astral projected version comes walking down the hill. Do you see it?
In her case, she did. In her case, she would see herself.
I know, but I'm saying Joe Blow fishing out there, would they see the person walking down that area when she's projecting down that way? Or would she just kind of be like there, like, why is no one seeing me?
But if she, you know, and let's just really get out there. If she's projecting herself willfully, not willfully, however. So, like, when she's in the car and she's watching herself drive and her conscious self is sitting there thinking, oh, my God, what is happening? I'm watching myself drive. Could that be when you run into somebody and they're, you know, very quiet and not really themselves, it's almost like they're not there, but you swear it's that person you know, and then you talk to them later, that wasn't me.
Yeah, I mean, could it be that?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many weird possibilities on this one.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing, though. I don't know if I ever want to have an experience like that or not. Like, part of me is like, oh, that'd be really kind of creepy and weird.
I just would assume that I was dead if I saw myself and I started having an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, it probably would suck you right back in, just the anxiety of it. Like, done. Okay. Samantha writes in, I'm currently listening to your podcast and thought I'd share just a brief story. Out of the many that I have, I moved into the home I'm in about 12 years ago with my mom and her new husband. I moved out a few years after I graduated high school, but I found myself back in this house since my children were born. When we first moved into the house, we found a trunk in the attic with a wedding dress and a few mason jars full of dark liquid. We've not moved the dress or opened the jars. However, I started to joke around that the house was haunted. Several experiences have happened after that discovery. The creepiest that I can recall is a random evening last fall. I was in the kitchen cooking dinner, and it was early fall, and several of the windows were open to let the crisp, fresh air in. My daughter came into the kitchen shaking with fear and asked me to hold her. She was four, and she told me that there was a mean man outside. She started to cry and asked me not to let the bad man in. As we live on a main highway, I thought maybe someone was in the driveway, perhaps looking for help with a car. I went from window to window looking for someone, and I saw nothing. As I stood in the dining room and stared into the front yard, I also started to shake. I got extremely cold and had that crawling feeling at the base of my neck and felt like someone was watching me. I went to the house and shut all the windows and lowered the blinds. My daughter refused to sleep in her own bed that night. I'm just discovering your podcast, and I think it's awesome. I'll share more stories as they come to me. Most have happened in this house. I'm so ready to move.
So, do you think the fact that she started joking about the house being haunted brought something on, or kind of made something like, okay, if she's joking about being haunted, I'll show her haunted?
Yeah, I think you can taunt stuff to the point where it's like, all right, I'm sick of this shit. I'm here. I'm going to let you know I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that being a possibility. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing. 855-853-4802. The phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Jessica writes in, "Hi guys, I'm a new listener to the show, but I'm already in love. I only wish I found it sooner. A little background on me. I call myself a skeptical believer of the paranormal. I've had only a few ghostly experiences. I cautiously wish I had more. So I had a friend during and after high school. I'll call her L. She told me that she could see and communicate with spirits. Of course, I was intrigued. She'd tell me of the different ghosts that came in and out of her life. One was a moaning and groaning voice coming from the basement, accompanied by sounds of chains. But there was a prominent ghost that stuck around for quite a while. She met him at her next-door neighbor's house, and he followed her home. She found out that his name was Jesse, and he died when he crashed his car into the neighbor's house years ago. His younger sister was with him, and she survived. Elle said that she had asked her parents about the accident, and they confirmed it. Anyway, one day we were sitting at her computer when she started making weird faces, like she was annoyed and was trying to shoo something away. At the same time, my shoulder that was closest to hers became ice cold. I asked her if she was okay, and she explained that Jesse was leaning between us and annoying her. Another time, we were in her kitchen, and a small radio remote flew from the counter to the floor on the opposite side of the room. There's no reason for this to happen on its own. One summer, I went on vacation with her family about 3 hours away. Elle and I were in the rec room completely alone. While sitting on the couch, we could hear things moving around in the kitchen. She told me it was Jesse. I looked into the kitchen to make sure no one was in there, and it was empty. I obviously believed her in these experiences because I was there to witness it. Elle and I lost touch, and I haven't had any paranormal experiences since. That's my little story, but I wanted to share. I hope to hear it on the show. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
You know, one thing I thought about just hearing this story, but it applies to most of the stories we get, is that some of these things can't be just Googled when the story took place because it happened before people had internet in their home. So
Google-ration?
That's not a word.
It is now.
But it happened like before they were able to look up and see.
Sure.
You know, so there's no way they probably would have known about this until they asked their parents,
mm-hmm.
which is that just is interesting. It's a lot harder, I think, to, you know, fake a haunting now because you can Google anything and find anything out and say, oh, I have so-and-so here with me. And you Googled it and you found out they died in that house.
Sure. I agree. I think it is interesting, though, when you look at trying to research stuff that happened prior to news services putting information online, prior to TV stations, newspapers that were online. So you go like pre-95, 94-ish, you know, when that stuff was just kind of starting to come about. Stories prior to that are a lot more difficult to get information on, unless it's something that people actually like research and it's a common subject. But if you're just trying to find like an obscure story of one specific tragedy that happened, I mean, good luck on some of that. I mean, some places now you're getting where they're translating the archive of old material onto online so you can find the stuff now, but that's still a very slow going process. It's not up there quite yet, but I imagine in time it'll be there. It's like where you still had to go back and I think in some cases you still do have to go back and look up literally things on like microfilm.
Right, but you have to know a rough estimate of when or what you're looking for.
Because there ain't no Googling that.
No.
But slowly even those things are getting translated over, which is exciting. Example was I was trying to find information on that deck chair that we'd seen. Did we talk about that on the show?
I don't know that we did.
There was a deck chair at an antique store, and it looked like an old ocean liner deck chair. And the marking on it said what ship it was, and it was it wasn't a massively popular ship, a fairly obscure ship of the 30s and 40s. But it was neat. It was just an old ocean liner deck chair, but it looked to be in too damn good of condition to be real. And it was just kind of sitting out in the antique store. And I was like, I don't know about this. And I just thought, I mean, even if it is a reproduction, I'd be interested in it if it's a reasonable price.
Sure.
And the lady at the antique store That's from the Titanic sister ship. No, it's not. Was my immediate reaction.
Like I said before. Yeah. We're the two worst people besides probably Dr. Ballard to pull that bullshit on.
It's like that. That's not even the name of one of its sister ships. So no, it's not. It's of the era, kind of. it's a little bit after that era, but it's not from anything of the Titanic. Well, this ship went down, and she was listing off all the shit of what happened to the ship, and it's like, no, it didn't. It was scrapped eventually. Mm-hmm. So no, it didn't sink, and it wasn't like survivors were throwing the chairs off the side of the boat
and hanging off the chairs.
Yeah, it was just like, stop with the bullshit, you know. So anyway, the thing is, these things are easily Googleable. It's not like you don't. It's a ship, you know. Yeah. That information does exist. But I did a little bit of research, and I found out that some company in New York, because New York Times now has their archives up online. Uh-huh. You have to pay extra usually to get them, but somehow I found some backdoor way of finding it. And some like lawn and garden company in like 1979 issued a bunch of deck chairs out as lawn furniture with the markings of this ship, mm-hmm, as lawn furniture.
Sure.
And it was a fairly decent reproduction, but unless you really kind of did a little research, you would think that this was what it was, because it was really sold in like one store in New York City in the late 70s. And just how good of shape it was and the screws that were used in it, it's like, I don't think this is real. And I tried to tell her this and show her this. Oh, no. I don't think so. Okay, well, you come back with proof and show me where that this is what you say it is.
Yeah.
And then we can talk. Never, ever heard back.
No.
But there you go.
Of course not.
It's still difficult to Google some of these things. So it took quite a while to find it, but it was in one of those weird archived things that are showing up. Had that archived article not been out there, I would have nothing.
And you
other than just my argument.
Wouldn't have bought it.
I wouldn't have, no.
She kept changing her story every time you called her out on it.
Yeah, it was interesting. Anyway, 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Maggie writes in, I grew up in what I believe was a haunted house. I have a lot of stories about this house, but one in particular is a great place to start. We'd experienced several things throughout our many years there, including many friends that would have overseeing this woman in our house, not knowing the backstory of there being a female ghost that was in our home. Random people seeing her or strange things that couldn't be explained always made us believe more that maybe it was true, that we did in fact have a ghost. But without myself, my sister, mom, or dad having experienced something so intense that couldn't be debunked ourselves, we just had this little fascination with the possibility that our house might be haunted, but by no means made me scared to be alone. I think we're always trying to talk ourselves out of this possibility. I was home from college my freshman year, and I was home alone. A friend of mine was coming over to pick me up for the night out, and I was running around the bottom floor of our house trying to get ready. Our laundry room was on the other side of the kitchen, and there were several large windows in our kitchen, so when my friend pulled up in front of our house, she could see me going in and out of the kitchen and from the laundry room in preparation for our night out. I left the door open for her, so when she came in, I told her I would be ready in a few minutes. She said to me as I bustled around the house, "Who else is here with you?" I told her no one, that I was home alone. She seemed puzzled, and as I grabbed my things to go, she said, "No, really, who's here with you?" And I told her, I replied, I'm home alone, why? I wasn't sure where she was going with this. She looked at me, fear in her eyes, and she said, "I saw you through the windows when I pulled up. If you're here alone, then who was following you in and out of the kitchen?" I froze and realized that this was another perfect example of our ghost showing herself to friends that had no clue she wasn't real. I couldn't get out of that house fast enough. We locked up and headed out on the town. We have since moved out of the house, but we know that our ghost was not only real, but a big presence in our lives. Many more stories to tell, but I'll leave you with that one.
That would be so annoying if everybody says your house is haunted, but you don't experience it. It's like, is this one big joke that everybody's just pulling on us? That everybody got together and said, let's just let them think their house is haunted.
And everybody's telling you it over and over, and you still don't get to see the ghost.
Yeah.
That would kind of suck, but I suppose it's probably a fairly normal thing if you're like just not sensitive enough to it. And your ghost is one of those deals where it's like it's only being picked up by the population that can hear or see its frequency, essentially.
I think if I weren't sensitive and somebody said that they saw somebody following me around in the house, it would really freak me out.
Yeah.
Being sensitive, though, I think I would know.
I'm going to tell Harper to start telling you that just randomly. Who's that person behind you, Mommy?
Yeah, that's not going to be good.
John writes in, this happened about 7 years ago. My aunt, uncle, and little cousin live in a mobile home park with a cemetery located directly behind their house. My aunt realized one day that my little cousin, who was 3 at the time, was regularly talking to someone when he was playing with his toys. My aunt asked him one day who he was talking to, and he replied, Donald. When my aunt asked him who Donald was, he replied, a little boy who said he had once lived there. My aunt immediately thought something paranormal, as she herself has always been a believer. She immediately did some research on the cemetery located behind the house. She only found 2 Donalds who were buried there, neither of which were a little boy. The thing that perplexed her most was a person who had contact information about the website. The last name was Kinney, which is my uncle's last name, and of course, her married name. After researching all of this, she told my uncle about my cousin's frequent encounters. He is no-nonsense kind of man and said that my cousin had probably created an imaginary friend. Things started to get very weird after this. Every night, my aunt and uncle would be woken up by banging on the wall. It would happen multiple times each week, waking them up many times. One night, my uncle awoke in the middle of the night. He said he felt someone pulling his foot. He told my aunt about it the next day. He then admitted he felt my cousin wasn't just talking to himself as he played. For about a month after that, my aunt would call out to Donald every night before they went to bed. She'd tell him they knew he was there and was welcome to stay if he kept him to himself and didn't wake them up anymore. This happened for about a month, after which my aunt stopped doing this. The occurrences stopped, and my cousin was no longer speaking to Donald.
So Donald just kind of disappeared.
Donald, like, heeded the warning, it sounds like. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, we'll live in happiness together, and you won't know I'm here.
Oh, wow.
Creepy story. Mm-hmm. And if only all hauntings could be resolved in such a easy way.
Right.
855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. You can write in on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. So a couple ways to get those stories in to us. And of course, if you like this thing and you want us to stay on the air, become an EPP, extra podcast person, you sign up for that over at ghostpodcast.com. Only $5 a month is all it is. You sign up, you get all the bonus episodes of the show and exclusive video content and a whole lot more as well. So check that out at ghostpodcast.com. Let's go to our next story. Rebecca says, hi, my name is Rebecca. I love your podcast. It saved me on a 22-hour trip to Australia, and ever since then, I have been hooked. I feel like I very rarely have experienced paranormal occurrences. I've been freaked out by strange things happening, but wouldn't consider myself sensitive to the supernatural. I grew up in a fairly haunted town in Marblehead, Massachusetts, right near Salem, so you can make your own inferences. The town dates to the 1600s, and I often would play in and around its oldest graveyard. Old Burial Hill. Never had anything too exciting happen, except maybe win a game of capture the flag or eat it tripping on a gravestone. Anyway, this story doesn't take place in Marblehead, but in the Finger Lakes area of New York. My husband and I love to go for hikes with our dog, and anywhere we can take him off leash is a plus. It was a cold winter day, and we decided to take him for a walk in the Finger Lakes National Forest. It's a large area of land on a ridge between Cayuga and Seneca Lakes. We have gone for walks in this area before, but today my husband wanted to try a different route. We started out from the car across a large cow pasture towards the woods. Rather than enter the woods on the trail, we decided to skirt the woods to look for deer and game birds for our spaniel to spring. We didn't see any animal activity, so my husband looked at the GPS on his phone and saw that we weren't too far from the trail, probably about half a mile. I figured we'd just walk through the woods and hop on the trail. As we walked to the edge of the woods, I noticed a barbed wire fence. I told my husband I didn't want to cross it. I just felt like we shouldn't. He wasn't at all worried, and pushed on the wire for the dog and me to hop over. I could see the fence was still pretty high for the dog, but he happily hopped over, losing just a small tuft of fur. No worries. I reluctantly hopped over, too. We started walking. The ground was thawing and there were puddles of freezing cold water everywhere, so we had to hop from high ground to avoid the water. I had this sinking feeling that something wasn't right. There just were so many reasons we shouldn't be there. The barbed wire, the cold. Maybe it was because I'm just not a fan of bushwhacking, but my husband loves it, and I know he would never put us in any serious danger, just maybe some pickers and poison ivy. But it felt like we had been walking for a long time. After it felt like an hour or so, I stopped to ask him if we could see how close we were to the trail. He said we were almost there, maybe another 10 minutes at the most. So we kept on walking. 10 minutes later, there before us was a barbed wire fence. My chest sank. How are we here? I thought. You just saw us near the trail. I did, he said, and got very quiet. I felt something wasn't right. Something didn't want us to cross the barbed wire fence and didn't want us in those woods. We were so tired at this point, and the spaniel was soaked, so we walked back to the car through the pasture. I don't cross barbed wire fences anymore. Thanks for reading my story. Hope you like it. I've had some other creepy things happen, but nothing quite like this. Best regards, Rebecca.
So did they walk in a big circle, or did something like play a trick on them and make them end up back where they were?
It's hard to know. It could have been a big circle. It could have been something else. It's just one of those things.
I think the creepy, dreaded feeling that they had probably was a tell there.
That played into it more than just we're lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's weird how that sort of thing happens, but it certainly happens.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing that. 855-853-4802, our phone number. Heather says, hi, Tony and Jenny. I've been listening for a year now, and I think I've caught up most of the backlog, and I'm now getting to the unplayed episodes from a couple of months ago. I just listened to a story from Jackie in Wisconsin about her teenage son experiencing banging on the walls. I've been wanting to write in for a while now, and this story made me stop what I was doing and head to the computer to write this. I had a very similar experience when I was 17 years old. I was a pretty moody teenager, living with my mom and stepdad. At the time, I had just been dumped quite unexpectedly by my boyfriend a week before my birthday. I was devastated. I didn't go to school for several days and spent time crying in my room. I can't recall if it was that night or a couple of nights after the breakup, but I had finally exhausted myself enough to be able to sleep. It was around 2 a.m. and I was drifting off to sleep. Just when I got comfy, my eyes got heavy. I heard a banging, just like Jackie from Wisconsin told. It sounded like someone angry pounding on the wall from the other side. The banging was coming from an exterior wall, so I shot out of bed and looked out the window, and nothing was there. There was no screen on my window, so I opened it and looked up to the roof. Nothing. Down to the ground and nothing. Side to side, nothing. I was on the second story with no trees around or anything else that could have banged against the wall. I shakily sat back in my bed and waited to see if I could hear anything else. The banging happened again, this time on another wall, an interior wall that I was sitting right next to. I jumped up and ran into the next room where the banging was coming from. It was an empty guest bedroom, and after checking the room and looking out the windows, I couldn't find anything that could be the cause. At this time, I was freaking out, but in fight mode, and I blazingly walked around checking the entire house. All was quiet. I went back upstairs to my room and sat on my bed again. Not long after, the banging happened again, this time on a third wall, one where the closet is. I ran to the closet, opened it to check, and of course nothing was there. The room on the other side of the wall, this time, was my parents' bedroom, so I went to wake them up. It says a lot about my irritation that I woke my stepdad up, since we didn't get along well and had a very negative relationship. He got up, checked around, and didn't see or hear anything. He said he would check the garage for animals in the morning. I went back to my room shaking and unable to sleep and stayed awake the rest of the night watching TV. It went in a blur. I didn't hear the banging anymore that night. Next morning, my stepdad and I looked up in the rafters of the garage for anything that could have made that noise and found no sign of anything. I knew it wasn't an animal, but I had to check anyway. The banging did not happen the next night or ever again. I felt like I was being toyed with, like I was in a cage and something was banging on the sides to get a reaction. I have more stories to share for next time and will write in again soon. I also want to add I'm very grateful for this podcast, and although Jenny and many others have the mindset of it happened, I don't want to know more, I think it's important to collect stories and data on these paranormal activities so we can learn more about what's going on. I read an article the other day, why scientists believe in dark matter and dark energy, but not ghosts. It all comes down to data. Anyway, keep up the good work. Thanks, Heather in Ann Arbor.
I don't not want to know more.
You never want to know more. You're always like, stop with the stories. Why are we telling ghost stories again today?
No, I always have more questions.
Yeah, I think you do. I'm not quite sure where that assumption came from.
No, sometimes I don't want to hear more because it scares me too much, but most of the time I still have more questions.
You want to hear more about our stories that we have on the show. You just don't want to watch horror movies.
Right.
That seems to be more your...
Right. Yeah. I'm a visual person, visual learner, and things stick with me if I see it. So I think that's why I don't like watching, but I can hear it all day long, mm-hmm. and it doesn't freak me out.
It'd be great someday when there's some invention that takes what's spoken word or a written word, and it just automatically generates imagery for you to look at.
Could you imagine how bad our show would be if we had that?
It'd be great.
Oh my gosh.
All sorts of creepy ass shit popping up. It's like a smell-o-vision or something, you know, or it's like, ooh, smell comes out of your television. Jeffrey writes in, back in August of 2011, I met my girlfriend, Lolly, from a taxi route I was assigned to in Lonsdale, Pennsylvania. She was a stay-at-home, live-in home health aide, caring for an older woman. Over the coming months, we forged a great relationship and spoke about paranormal and strange occurrences that partook in her job. So she claimed that at night she'd feel observed from the distance by an unknown entity that seemed intractable and undetectable. I asked what happens on a typical scenario, and she says, I'd have an eerie androgynous voice call my name when I'm alone sleeping. It was like telepathy, or some sort of a telepathy condition. I often slipped in and out of sleep paralysis. I'm absolutely fascinated about any kind of contact, whether it's angel, demon, or ghost. Before I heard of Tony and Jan or Real Ghost Stories Online, I've been a Coast to Coast AM insider as well. This is another show that also studies paranormal, the unknown, metaphysical conditions, out-of-body experiences, and so on. So it's October 18th, 2013, and that night I downloaded a podcast, and that was a night where the host had a special guest named Uri Geller on. He was a guy that was gifted in dealing with metaphysical and doing weird things like bringing electronic equipment back to life and bending spoons. I also happened to be spending the night over with Lolly at her job site. Uri on the podcast is telling people to believe with all your heart and focus your collective consciousness on a clock, a remote that had dead batteries, and know that it will generate and come back. So the clock on the wall that had been dead for over 9 months with no battery change, laying down, and I feel the strange aura in case an internal white light go through the house. It was formless and with no defined figure, but it was causing the drywall and surrounding home material to react and pop or tap. At this point, I'm wound up, and I can't really sleep, and this energy went around the room. My smartphone at the time was a Samsung Galaxy S3, and it triggered a bunch of false positives. I was getting text audibles, email audible alarms, and weird beeps from the phone, but when I checked it, there was no actual report. Lolly wakes up and feels concerned and checks on Roseanne, the old lady we cared for. Roseanne was screaming about that she was going to die and freaked out and fell out of bed. Now, at the same time this was happening, I had a brief three-way nightmare split between that three separate people were dying in my dreams. A Chinese businessman, a CIA KGB operative in a corporate building, and a man at a bar having a heart attack. I gather my wits and hear this tick, 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 and realize, holy mother of God, the dead clock on our wall of 9 months generated and worked again. Flashbacks of the program and Uri Geller bringing electronic or mechanical things back to life with energy. Freaking out, still not done, Lolly came back down to bed next to me, and she stared at me as if practically or partially possessed with a monotone voice and said everything is going to be okay and a strangely slightly different voice tone. So now I'm really damn scared. At this point, I'm hearing rattling of the chinaware in the cupboard shelving. Something slid out of place, and I hear a shriek. So I put my pants back on and notice it fell when I went out there. Now then, directly behind me, a piece of candy fell out of the guest dish on a glass table. I ran out by 3:30 a.m. The very next day, I talked to Lolly again about it, and she has no memory of what happened besides hearing the voices. a few more later, but I'm sure this will put most on edge.
I think something was messing with him because he was listening to the podcast.
Or is it the collective energy that was being talked about, honing in on certain things, stirring things up?
Could be. I don't know. There's just so much that went on. I almost felt like it was just something going around saying, I'm going to mess with everything I can,
yeah,
trying to scare them.
Like maybe an existing haunting that was there that just got stirred up and found that to be the right window to make itself known.
Yeah.
Creepy story. Thank you for sharing that. Marley writes in, this isn't quite a ghost story, but it is this in the same realm. I was in Illinois staying with my grandparents for a couple of months. My family, including my mother, who I'm very close to, were all living back in Florida. It was around 11 at night, and I was downstairs watching a movie on my Chromebook for whatever reason. I decided to sit up on top of the counter against the back wall. There was a basket of candles and a couple of glass ornaments near the edge of the counter, but I made sure I wasn't going to knock it over when I first got up onto the counter. I was sitting there watching this movie, and I was getting kind of tired. I started to stretch out and accidentally knocked over the basket of candles. It landed on the floor with a really, really loud crash. I cursed under my breath and started to pick them up, and when my phone pinged, it was my mom in Florida texting me to ask, "Are you okay?" I double-checked it was her texting me and not my grandparents who were upstairs. I figured my grandma heard the crash and wanted to check on me because that seemed more likely than my mother in Florida just happening to text me. It was her. This is what her message said. "You okay? I was drifting off to sleep and had an image of you accidentally cutting your finger badly in Grandma's kitchen." I replied, "I didn't cut my finger, but I accidentally knocked a basket of candles to the floor. It was so loud that I almost died of shock." She messaged me back asking if this had just now happened. I told her yes, it had, only a few seconds prior. She was surprised and so was I. Her next message was, "Well, I guess we're connected. Can you try to keep it down now so I can get some sleep?" And I replied, "Yeah, sure, Mom. Good night." And went to bed myself. I asked my dad about it later, and he told me that that's not all that's surprising. Apparently, things like that happen a lot in our family. Thanks for reading my story. It was short. I have a few more short ones that I'll write in about sometime, including the car accident exactly 1 year before my birth and a family friend's encounter with an entity in her TV, if you're interested.
I think it's just a classic empathic connection, mm-hmm, to somebody. And mothers and daughters especially, we find that happens a lot too.
Have you ever had it happen with our two? Or does that kick in more when they're like older and gone?
You know, I think that's more probably when they're older and gone. I mean, I just don't know. I've never had that really happen with ours.
Specifically? No.
No. I'm wondering about when Harper's in school, mm-hmm, and she's not with me or you all the time.
Yeah, they're pretty much, at least Harper is with us pretty much all of the time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult to be like, "I wonder what's going on." It's like, let's look over the other way and there she is. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I could see that happening more then.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks for sharing that story with us. Jaquita writes in, "I was about 4 years of age, very long time ago. I lived in a small community in Oklahoma named Yuba. Our house was about a half block up in a pasture behind my aunt's house. I'm basing my reference on the fact that I am 3.5 years older than my brother and is a very small baby. There used to be a dog in the closet, kind of an animal can reference it to as an American bull terrier. The dog was solid white and medium-sized. The dog would stay probably a block from me off in the pasture and just stand and stare at me when I would go outside and play by the porch. As I noticed the dog, I'd start screaming and crying, and Mom would come to the door and ask me, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And all I could say was, the dog," and point at the dog's direction. Mom never saw the dog. I could go to my aunt's house, and Mama would stand and watch me. The distance wasn't 3/4 of a block, and there was nothing between me and the house I was going to. The dog would show up, and he never got close to me, but would trot parallel to me, keeping me in its sight, and of course, I was terrified. Run screaming to whichever house I was going to. There's no way for me to convey, even today, many years later, the terror that dog would give me just by standing away, staring at me. It was one night, I remember, I was sleeping with my mom and my baby brother was in the middle and I was by the window. I was laying on my side facing the window. The window shade was up and I woke up, opened my eyes, and I can see it so plainly. The white dog had its paws on the outside of the window still, staring in at me. And there was a nightlight on so I could see very plainly, and of course I immediately went into terror and started screaming. To this day, I'm not partial to medium-sized white short-haired dogs or sleeping by a window with a shade up. I talked to my mother several times before she passed away, and she very vividly remembers me being afraid of a white dog, but Mom never saw this dog. She told me it was probably my guardian angel. I told her no, that I don't think as a child I would have been afraid of a guardian angel, even as a teenager. When we went to Yuba, I would be edgy and alert for this animal. We only lived in this house for a summer, thank goodness. I firmly believe, based on fear I know I had, this was not a fragment of my imagination. I could see this dog in only me. And if by chance I have to pass by this place in the highway at night, I keep my eyes alert on the side of the road to make sure that I have no passenger hitching a ride on the back of my car.
I think being that it's a dog and she was a kid, that, you know, kids and dogs, for the most part, they like each other and they're attracted to each other, that she was so terrified of this dog. I don't think it was something good. I think it was just taunting her and giving her a hard time.
The fact that she had that just innate fear. Unless there was some sort of traumatic dog experience prior.
Sure, and that's always a possibility, but
sure.
She didn't say anything about, I've always been afraid of dogs.
Yeah, exactly. I was afraid of dogs forever. I never really had like a super traumatic experience, but like every dog interaction I had from like birth to probably like 4 or 5 years old was like a real jump on you type dog. I never got bit, but it was always scary. So I naturally had a sense of, to a certain extent, a fear of dogs.
Sure.
For a good period of time, or just a dislike. And we never had a dog. But so many dogs that I interacted with were just not good dogs. They were, or just not well-trained dogs, I think should probably be the operative word there. And then it wasn't until much later in life where I actually had some dogs that were nice. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I can like dogs.
Yeah.
I do like dogs. But that conditioning, though, you know, especially when you're really young, that can really make you like, or any animal, anything, cats, whatever, you know, it may be. It can pretty much scar you to a certain extent on the species for a while. Thank you for sharing that experience with us. We do greatly appreciate that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the program, help keep us on the air. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com to get all of those bonus episodes of the program. And like I said, that is what fuels this thing and keeps it going. Without your support, we couldn't do it. So ghostpodcast.com. Check that out. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.